The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your host for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to the show. Today, my special guest is Paul Peisner. We're both Silicon Valley natives. Paul has done a lot in his career, which we're going to get into, but also currently serves as the director for Northern California of CityServe. That's more of his passion project, but also serves with a project called GeoGenesis and how they're using technology for good. Welcome, Paul.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Keith.
So, Paul, it's been really great to get to know you, all the things you've done and all the things you are doing for the community. Before we get into your actual work and how you're applying all those skills you've developed over the years, I did want to get your background. You and I both come out of tech. What's your origin story? How did you grow up in Silicon Valley, and then how did that lead to the things you're doing right now?
For a number of years, been working with the engineering communities. I have been working as business development, partnering, and selling strategies for large organizations that have historically broken into waterfall siloed groups just for, for the intent of getting through vulnerable, high breakage environments. And working with those folks, what we started to do was put together end-to-end flow strategies in terms of turning those big competitive silos and big organizations into more smaller collaborative groups that work on outcomes rather than just busy KPI stuff. And in doing so, it kind of made me aware of how much of our culture really doesn't really embrace that. We still work in highly competitive silos instead of working together. So, after a few decades working with large companies and seeing it, changing the conversations to something that executives could manage in an end-to-end flow, started to realize that I really wanted to help solve some of the biggest problems in our communities. And I was trying to, I've been engaging with different local hero groups that do some amazing stuff individually, but helping them understand that, to really make a difference in the life of an individual who needs to progress or a group of people that need to find a better place. They need to holistically work together with collaborative efforts to try and drive to an outcome that changes something, not just sustains people in their current painful situations. So it became a passion of mine, and then amazingly ran into a Web3 organization that was about doing that and having a Web3 environment that was allowing for folks to both get visible, to kind of build those bridges between the organizations in a process flow that we could document, and then eventually really to help them be more successful at sustaining themselves in the organization. So super excited to have bumped into the Geo Browser team and working with a product called GeoGenesis. Still ready to get launched. It's available today, but we plan to launch sometime in April.
Got it. So thanks for the background, and interesting about the note culturally here in the U.S. that still this thought that, we're pretty – the independent mindset, the lack of collaboration. So building tools that can encourage people to collaborate in a way that can influence and impact others, that's great. A question I have before we really get into GeoGenesis is – especially at this time right now, because there had been this crypto winter and people still don't completely understand Web3. Web3 was a huge moniker, up until about a year and a half ago, where things kind of went off the rails with the perception of cryptocurrencies. And again, not all blockchains should necessarily be associated with crypto. But I did want to take a moment, if you don't mind, No, no, go ahead.
No, I had the same concern about the crypto space, and same perceptions. There was a lot of activity. There was a lot of learnings. There was a lot of people taking advantage of the crypto because there was a lot of hype in that area. And I think what happened in the winter is a lot of folks had to kind of do some reassessing. There were folks that were just, you know, storytelling and profiteering off the environment. But I think at the core, it really creates an environment where you can build something of value and it can be sustainable. And because of that transparency and that ability to democratize it and make it out to the community, it did have a season of real vulnerability. People didn't understand what value was and how to put value behind or measure the value of a crypto effort. I think there's a lot of intent to kind of restore trust and to build that out. And I just think it, you know, the winter season has given us an opportunity to rethink and reposition. And for folks that really want to drive positive changes in the globe or around and in our local communities, it really is a wide open opportunity for doing good in our communities. And I think that's what this represents. I think the winter cleared the playing field of distractions. And I think we're back to places where we now have a better sense of what Web3 and the crypto community should be doing. And I think this is their chance to really to be successful, not only from a revenue generating perspective, but also on the impact of the community, really giving back to the community itself.
Thanks, Paul. Really appreciate your insight into that. I'll remind folks that Web3 became a very popular moniker a couple of years back. So Web1 is this concept when the internet was young that we have a blog, we have a page, the information's static, you go there, you read it, you can't interact. Web2, something like the rise of a Amazon or an eBay that you can then transact and you can actually get value out of that, but it's in a closed, I mean, as much as people don't realize, a lot of our mega companies, and now we have the Magnificent Seven. A lot of these companies became dominant and huge in their space, which actually made it less visible for smaller players. And so now Web3, forget the crypto aspect, Web3 is simply the ability to have identity and license for you as an individual, usual website owner to be able to get directly to your customers, your clients, without having to go through a Shopify and Etsy, anything that's like its big structure. So Web3 in itself shouldn't be synonymous with crypto at all. Sometimes it is. What I was going to ask, and we have the whole show today to continue on about it, is that this is my seventh season. I had interviewed Jerry Cuomo, the head of Hyperledger for IBM, and we already talked about using Web3 for good, technology for good. So as we close out this segment, what is your high-level thinking about how Web3 and crypto can still be used for good?
So Web3 really creates this this white canvas of opportunity for us to be able to put information, verifiable information up on the web, allows for people with insightful, innovative thinking to not be hidden, not to be undiscovered, and puts them up there. And because it is an environment that actually, you know, kind of measures the timestamp, gives us some voting capabilities and allows us to put some of the background data up in a place where it's verifiable, it's transparent, it's kind of pointing at a direction that is collaborative. We can actually do a lot more with Web3 than we ever could do with the centralized Web2 environments. I mean, part of that is, you know, we were so enamored about getting our businesses online back in the day with Web2. What we're looking at now is this ability not to just be online, but to be online with purpose, right? To collaboratively allow for us to maintain the privacy of much of our business data, but the heartbeat of working out in the community, that heartbeat data of what we're doing for the community, really opens up new strategies for allowing us to track individuals with anonymized data that are going through different services and working through those environments and measuring the outcome of what we're trying to do in the community instead of what we're trying to do for an individual in one stage in their journey to go from current state to a better state, whatever that might be. The Web3 environment gives us that ability to sit down and rethink what is possible. How do we take the complex and use AI to take complex systems design work and really break it down into everyday vernacular or everyday usable guidance data for individuals who don't live in an academic world or don't live in a different environment. We can use AI to bring it down to the level of understanding that means something to the individual and help the individual make everyday statements that apply to the way they live and translate that into understandable process data that is sitting up in a much more complex world. So AI isn't just simply a moving of information. It's allowing us to kind of talk between experiences with different purposes without having that barrier between complex language systems design work and everyday activities that the individual doesn't necessarily see how they fit into the big picture, but they're trying to go down a path that gets them to a different place. We now have that ability to help get more visibility and more traceability.
Got it. Thanks. And we're going to dive in a lot deeper with some of the examples. So thanks for giving the explanation. And I know it's a lot for people to digest. If you want to find out more about Paul, the project for Genesis, GeoGenesis, go to keithku.com. And also, we have other websites, svn.biz for Silicon Valley Insider and xtalents.com for 10 talents. And we'll be right back with more with Paul.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to the show. Once again, we're joined with Paul Peisner, who, like me, is a Silicon Valley native. In our first segment, we learned about Paul's journey from enterprise tech, now living his passions in both being the Northern California director of CityServe, a nonprofit that is doing a lot of social good, as well as working for a Web3 company, GeoGenesis, and how they're using technology also for good. So it's been a really cool story. And Paul, thanks again for being here.
No, it's very good. And again, I work for an organization called GeoBrowser, and our product is GeoGenesis. But there's a little bit of confusion in that. But no, it's all good. So I'm very excited to kind of share the rest of the story with you. This has been fun.
Yeah, thanks. And I did want to get into GeoBrowser, what it's about. And I think we'll start with a continuation from our last segment, which is specifically people hear a lot about the unhoused crisis here in California, specifically in San Francisco. And I think GeoBrowser, with their GeoGenesis project, is doing a lot to address that. And we had talked about how right now there's a resurgence in the concept of Web3. So how exactly does the GeoBrowser fit into addressing this, both holistically and then specifically for the company? But let's start off with the overarching theme, and we sort of got into it in the last segment.
So with the graph, we're able to kind of provide a better working environment where we're able to index and enable some of the developer folks. And what we've done is we've created this user interface that allows for people to go into spaces they're interested in on the GeoGenesis product. This would be like education or politics or even crypto if you want to kind of get in and learn about those environments. And it's a dynamic space where people can make claims and we can verify information so that you can trust the information you're looking at. Now, when it came to community good, I went to a presentation not even a year ago. And I sat down and listened to kind of what this environment represented for tackling some of the biggest problems in the Bay Area and specifically in San Francisco. And I was really drawn in because what they were trying to do was exactly what I was trying to do in the community without the tools, verbally telling people over and over again how valuable they were, but we needed to kind of work together. So I fell into a conversation with this group and just thought, I want to be part of this effort to really drive collaborative bridges or building bridges between organizations that have historically done some great stuff, but done it in isolation and historically have left people between gaps instead of just kind of flowing and processing them through. So this organization, GeoBrowser, as an example, has taken on a very practical role in San Francisco to really combat and to understand the challenges of their homeless situation that we have there. So they started a community gathering that they we call We Heart SF, and it gathers in a physically every week. We gather in one of the Presidio buildings, a place called the House of Web3. And the House of Web3 is a place where folks interested in Web3 security, application development, integration capabilities. It's a workspace they can come in and leverage to kind of work through challenges that they can't necessarily solve on their own, or work through global collaborations and strategies that are out there. But on Wednesdays, we actually invite folks in the community that are working with the unhoused, with people living in food scarcity, trying to address some of the bigger problems in the city with public safety and education. And we bring it in, we bring everybody in to kind of share a little bit about what we're doing in the community and to better understand what is going on so that we can actually start to support and encourage those things. So I co-host a weekly gathering in San Francisco, somewhere between, 50 to 60, with 35 to 60 people on a weekly basis, sometimes bigger, sometimes a little bit smaller. But it's a great collaborative environment, cross-discipline folks, people that have great housing expertise, people that have great feeding programs. And we get speakers to kind of bring in ideas, and then we start to collaboratively work on ways we can work together and design solutions that solve issues throughout the whole city itself. Now, as a practical piece, they created DAOs. Are you familiar with a DAO?
Definitely. Okay. I think you should go over it again with those.
Well, I would love for you to start off with, if you can help me out, just like with your understanding of a DAO. What's a DAO and how is it different from a foundation?
All right. Well, this is a whole different show, but in a nutshell, a decentralized autonomous organization. And I think the reminder, because we could get very technical on what a DAO is and what a lot of things claim to be DAOs and aren't really DAOs. I think in terms of this concept, a DAO is, think of, for lack of a better term, for what people assume to be nonprofits to be, a DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization in that once you set it up, like imagine the state of Wyoming was the first to allow a DAO to be a legally recognized entity, that once you set it up properly, and there's so much governance involved to set it up, it runs on its own. So imagine you wanted to create a nonprofit. That's why I'm using that example. And then you let it go. And because of the governance structure, because of the rules that was put into the DAO, and usually encoded on some type of blockchain. Again, blockchain is not cryptocurrencies. You're able to then sustain that, and people can, I'm going to use terms that people understand versus what you and I know in terms of this background. Yep. But think about investing in something. Well, now you're investing in a DAO, and because it's transparent and because it's autonomous, then the aspirational goal of the DAO is that it can't be manipulated, it can't be corrupted, that if it's set up properly, that all the members of the DAO don't have to worry about who's leading it, but they get to see everything that happens on it. So anyway, there's so many ways to go on this. It's a whole nother show.
No. So we actually set up 5 DAOs. And they took a very practical approach to it. Just one classic example for street outreach. We felt that one of the 5 disciplines that we wanted to invest and support was street outreach. And so we found some street outreach folks that were historically walking the streets, getting to know the folks in one particular neighborhood, which is a tenderloin. But we support efforts to be present to the unhoused community in many locations through many events. But what we do is we get volunteers that are historically not not familiar with the process, and we get folks to do it every day to walk us through and meet folks out there. Now, the DAO is kind of a fundraising effort as well. So we invest in all 5 of the DAOs, right? And they're everything from, interim housing DAOs to mentoring to outreach to recovery. We can go on, but the idea is that we're investing into these DAOs on a monthly basis using revenue that's being generated by the crypto community. And that is being converted into US dollars. But we actually fund the group, and the individuals can either receive the funds for walking the street and doing it because we believe it's a good thing to do, But they can also turn around and hand it back to the organization that helped them do that. And we find that a lot of folks that aren't necessarily in need of everyday funds can actually support the communities by participating and sharing that revenue with the individuals that are helping them out. So we're funding those efforts. We're funding individual efforts to kind of keep the conversations moving forward and progressing as project management pieces. But part of it is we believe that Web3 allows us to find great people who want to invest efforts and to reward them with something that's very easy to kind of hand to them, resources that they can convert to dollars and use it to kind of do good in the community. So GeoBrowser is putting its money where its mouth is and creating a digital environment, but we're also documenting the data of how we're changing and collaborating together. And we're starting to create an understanding of how groups work together and how the heartbeat of good working data out on the street needs to be part of the community flow. And then how do we track people, allowing them to be both unidentified individuals, but with a with anonymous data that we can see which services are being leveraged out in the community itself and start to put together an outcome-driven data that says, hey, look, we want to help people go from current state when they want to make transitions and moves. We want to walk with them and help them as best we can. And we need to measure it because not every group can take on an individual. They typically have problems or stages, and we have to address those and open up the world of possibility and let them explore ways out and helping them with those transitions. And that requires that everybody that plays a role in that is sharing some transitional data of how do we get people from broken states to restored states and get them back to contributing members of our community.
Thanks, Paul. As we're finishing up on this segment, there's a lot that you covered, and we'll go do that again in the next segment. So really, when we think about kind of the push and pull mechanisms of why people do what they do, I think the way to think about GeoBrowser and the way that it's set up its Web3 and its interactions with the user base is that you have an incentive system, it's an incentive program. And so the more usage and adoption of people doing things that they would do anyway, but now they're doing it either because of their passion or because it, which is not necessarily, it's legitimate, is that they want to increase their holdings of doing these activities will increase their holdings of Web3 and crypto, that will then translate into actual tangible results to the underserved community. And then also continues to amplify that incentive program. Before we move on, I want people to know you can find Paul on LinkedIn. His last name is Peissner, which is P-E-I-S-S-N-E-R. And again, you'll see that he is with the geobrowser.io organization. So you can also find out more about the GeoGenesis project by going to geobrowser.io. And then for us, you can find us on keithku.com. svn.biz and xtalents.com, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Ku.
All right, welcome back to the show. Once again, special guest today, my good friend Paul Peissner, who is both the Northern California Director for CityServe and also works with the geobrowser.io. It is a company that is using Web3 technologies in many innovative ways, including serving the underserved. And that's what we've been talking about today, social impact, a technology for social good. Paul, welcome back.
Glad to be back here. This is great.
And I wanted to give a shout out because we kind of talked about it throughout the show, but I want to make it really clear. Paul actually leads a community a gathering every week in San Francisco at the Presidio. It's called the House of Web3. It's a collaborative space for many people interested in using technology for social change. And one of the things I wanted to really get across is that when I think about people working on these types of projects using Web3 technologies, it really is about trying to do things, the grassroots effort, that you don't need a lot of overhead, that you can just be people with a shared passion and interest. And because technology is accessible and available, that you can just get started. And I think that is one of the key things that people really, because as we've grown up, people think technology is kind of this black box. It's hard to grasp or hard to get access to. This is different. So Paul, once again, thanks for being here.
No, it's great. And I'd love to have people come to our open invitation. We Heart SF event every Wednesday. We gather in the Presidio in the House Web3, as you mentioned. Parking is amazing. It's a great open space. It's been redesigned in the last couple of years. So if you haven't been out to the Presidio, it's a brilliant place to come out, hang out. And it's a great community of bright minds and big-hearted individuals who are making changes, not only in San Francisco, but we're bringing in experts from around Northern California to come in each week and share some brilliant ideas. So we'd love to have you.
Thanks, Paul. And then what time?
12 to 1:30 every day. We serve lunch and it's a kind of a community room and there's a lot of sharing that goes on in place. Great networking experience. So yeah, 12 to 1:30 every Wednesday. We're very good about getting everybody out on time, but it's a jam-packed Wednesdays full of a lot of insightful individuals and a lot of networking opportunities at the very end.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I've been there a couple of times. It's right next to the Disney Museum, so you can't miss it in a hotel. So I really encourage people that are interested in understanding how you can use technology for social good without a lot of overhead. You should definitely check it out. And there's just great people there. Following on this theme of the role of technology in social change, in your opinion, what is the potential, especially with Web3, into doing that, actually applying that for social change?
So first of all, one of the things that we can do is we can take individuals who are doing incredible jobs in isolated areas, and we can bring their model out into a global conversation. When something is it effective because it's addressing a specific issue, or are they innovative in an environment that most people don't see or understand? So what we're able to do is highlight individuals. We have one group out of Oakland that has, you know, I think their roots were immigrants coming into the Tenderloin in San Francisco, coming in as didn't speak the language, didn't understand the culture. Now they run one of the largest nonprofits in the region on getting people integrated into society. They've got data on, you know, hundreds of people that have gone from unhoused to homeowners and helped them all along the way. They've got a brilliant holistic process that it's not just great for the East Bay or for the Sacramento region, but it's really a great model for San Francisco to consider. And so we bring in people to kind of talk about, like, what are the holistic approaches for really helping people make those transitions? And what are the critical collaborations you need to have to make sure that where you're weak, someone else can fill in and cover that gap? That's what's been most amazing locally. What I find incredibly rewarding is I take some of the language, the ontology of creating searchable and indexed words that are part of our Web3 project, and then working with a global team to find ways so that we're establishing a scalable or a growing model that allows us to go beyond just Northern California, but to create an environment where we can benefit the whole globe. Any place that wants to fix their city, their community, their county, their state, we're creating a place where you can leverage what we're learning here, but we're applying it globally. And we have the global community helping with the language and the kind of making sure that this doesn't become just a tool for a local effort, but it's really intended to inspire folks to do good in their communities and to leverage models that are working and have been clearly identified and created so they can be replicated as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting and unique aspect too, is once you set up something like this program in San Francisco, how can you apply it to Los Angeles, New York, Miami, and other, you know, Portland, Seattle, all the places that have similar challenges with the unhoused. With that, how do you plan to get those communities activated?
So it's really interesting. I think for us, the knowledge sharing and inspiring people to believe that they can do it, and they're probably already doing some elements of it, but they're not working it together. I think getting people to work together and then finding things, finding resources that can come alongside and make them incredibly powerful or incredibly far-reaching, Those are easy. Those are byproducts of just good collaborative efforts that they understand where they fit, like understanding the flow of helping an individual or a people of focus, what role you play and where's your strength, and understanding like where do you need to hand people off to, and then how do you measure outcomes that are on the other side of an organization, or really being grateful for the organizations that are feeding into your program. Because none of us work alone. And I think once we understand kind of what the outcomes look like for an individual journey across multiple services, we can start to put together a strategy on how we share data that's appropriate to be shared. And then how do we track the metrics that are achieving community goals and not just individual organizational goals. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's important to get that point across, which is that in a lot of cases, especially when you're dealing with sensitive areas, sensitive issues, data privacy is still really important. And so one of the things that can be done using blockchain technologies or Web3 technologies is that you're able to both be transparent, as we talked about earlier, and also be anonymous. So if you think about the end user, the recipient of the goods and services who want to protect their identity, give them respect and dignity, that it's important to basically give them an anonymized number. So we call it a token. And so therefore, yep, as long as you set it up correctly, let's say that I'm getting or receiving services, but I don't want anyone to know who I am. All they'll know is that my identity is obfuscated by a token, by a number, but that's a unique identifier back to those they're tracking. So you think about all the services that we provide, you need the metrics in order to continue justifying the funding, continue to show the efficacy of the project. And so I can use the example instead of like, think about a medical research trial, all the things that you do if you're ever part of a research study, all those apply in this case. And so that's why I think it's important. Paul, before we get on to the next segment, let's once again, let people know how to get a hold of you. So it's Paul Peissner, P-E-I-S-S-N-E-R. You can find Paul on LinkedIn. You can find more about this program, which is the Geo Browser and their GeoGenesis product. You go to geobrowser.io. So geobrowser.io.
Yeah, and my email is super easy. It's just paul@geobrowser.io. If you want to reach out to me that way as well.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
All right, welcome back to the show. Once again, special guest today, my good friend Paul Peissner, who is both the Northern California Director for CityServe and also works with the geobrowser.io. It is a company that is using Web3 technologies in many innovative ways, including serving the underserved. And that's what we've been talking about today, social impact, a technology for social good. Paul, welcome back.
Glad to be back here. This is great. What's amazing to me is on the anonymized side of the house, there's a reward for individuals that are participating as well. So we've been talking about because we have a crypto platform, long history background, rewarding people with points or with some kind of affirming currency that could translate into U.S. dollars. So, you know, what we're thinking about and trying to, you know, kind of put some strategies around it. I think there's some early projects that are doing this right now. We're helping immigrants who don't have identities get jobs so they can then start to get their first efforts and raise money so they can then pay for things that will sustain their jobs. I think there's one group that is providing bikes for immigrants, and they'll pay for the bike the first time and doing a food delivery piece. And then the second time they should have enough resources to reserve the bike. And then they help them with identity. They help them get into a much healthier place where they can start legitimately participating in the community. And it's an amazing thing that they're using crypto to get it started. It converts to U.S. dollars and kind of takes it. But it's just a small donation piece on behalf of an individual who wants to start working and contributing in a positive way. Likewise, for the unhoused, We could do the same thing when individuals go see a caseworker, or they go and they're participating in programs that are helping their journey, and reward them with donated currencies. And then we can translate it to US dollars. That means they can go shopping for going to go visit their caseworker. They can walk in with a QR code that has, you know, has a revenue out there, and they could actually benefit, and they can start to earn income for doing positive things that take up their time and energy. And we want to reward them for doing that. And that's one of the ways that we're looking into, kind of like, how do we do that? And who do we need to work with to really start that? But because it's driven by a DAO, it doesn't require government participation. We can just voluntarily experiment with something that works. And if it works, we can then roll it out to a widespread piece. It's the explore and experiment capabilities of working with Web3 that allow us to take ideas and turn them into practical experiments and learn from them, improve them, and scale them out or adjust them or not do them if we realize that it doesn't work without having all the bureaucracy of having to go back and do things. So it's an amazing community, and they're doing some incredible things in terms of exploring and experimenting with ways to help people today.
Thanks, Paul. That is a really great application. So thanks for sharing that. I wanted to ask you in our final moments, what is the future of GeoGenesis? Like, we're starting off in San Francisco, we're all local. What is the vision for what GeoGenesis is going to become?
So we think that GeoGenesis, and especially the role it's going to play in the nonprofit towards the summer of this year, we're going to get service organizations in specifically within one geography, San Francisco, but it's also going to be extended to the Bay Area. But in San Francisco, we're going to identify service providers that collaboratively are going to work together. And we're going to explain how they fit together in six or seven different journeys from broken lives that want to be improved, and how they have to kind of transition or navigate between those services to really get to the better state, which is what all of us want. We want to help them get back on their feet after the bump in the road that they've run into. So when they're motivated to kind of drive through those navigation pieces, we want to improve the collaboration and the transparency of how they're doing and places we can come alongside and help them on that journey. But I think to me, what's most important is by end of year, we have a stated goal that we want to help fundraise for the groups that are having positive impact in those efforts. We'd like that same platform that makes you aware of who in the community is doing good, how much they're doing good with their metrics, and then how you can support them in those efforts. We want to make that one platform where people can understand who's doing it, how effective they are, and what the need is, and be able to do something right on Web3.
Thank you. And how would people get involved? I mean, we've been talking about this for almost an hour. How can people actually get directly involved, other than showing up on our iHeart San Francisco Wednesdays?
So getting involved is great. I mean, and it really depends on where you're located. So being involved is something that, we encourage every city. There are cities all over the Bay Area today where we're aware of Milpitas and San Jose and some other cities that are consciously building bridges so that they've got a holistic effort. So get involved in your communities, understand how they work together and not in isolation. And one of the things that we tell people is, well, it's great to contribute and donate both time and money. When you get involved in the life of an individual who needs to be restored or needs to be improved, while it is awkward for you, investing your life in them is amazing. Find somebody that is out of your comfort zone and open up your network, your friends, the people. Think about how your network of folks could go to work helping an individual, because that's a game changer for the individual you're helping, but also for your network of friends to be aware of what you're doing in the community itself. So GeoBrowser really wants to help you with personal space in terms of what you're journeying to, the needs you see in your community. We want to be that place where what you're doing and what you're seeing becomes the data that gets shared in the environment, and that the community can surround it and kind of like start to address it together. That makes sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And I'm glad you had the call to action for people to get involved. So let's say that you're actually got a technical background and you want to get involved with GeoBrowser. What are the on-ramps to do that?
Oh, dude, we have come to Wednesday because if you have a technical background, we need developers more than we need anything else in the community, because the nonprofit world doesn't have technical skills. They have empathy for individuals, but they don't have the technical chops to really create a scalable solutions to navigate through some of the most complex financial challenges. When there is money for the community, it usually has a myriad of requirements, and getting a software in place so that while there are exceptions and requirements, we can factor those into some of the smart contracts, into the flows, and we can create something that the nonprofits aren't being held back or penalized for, but they're aware of, and they can address them before the requirements surprise them or negate their efforts or block their ability to do good in the community. So if you want to help, we've got some great organizations that need a little bit of help of enabling them to the web. If you're web friendly, we'd love to have a growing list of folks that help organizations tell their story more effectively on their site. It's super easy to jump in and start becoming what we call an editor on the Geo browser environment. And if you have a nonprofit, let's get their story up on Web3 and just, take action and put their story up there. And then let's start to fit them into the ecosystem and the community awareness of where they are.
All right. Well, Paul, it's been a pleasure having you on Silicon Valley Insider. Definitely, if you want to find Paul, as he said, you can email him at paul@geobrowser.io. Check out iHeart Wednesdays if you're in San Francisco, every Wednesday, 12 to 1:30 at the House of Web3 at the Presidio. To find out more about us, you go to keithku.com. You can go to svn.biz. You can go to 10talents at xtalents.com, and I'll be actually interviewing Paul again on a more personal side.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate the time with your community. This has been awesome.
Thanks, Paul. Come back anytime.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Ku. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.